welcome to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm so excited to be interviewing Mer Lafferty. Mer is an author, podcaster and freelance writer. Her first novel, Playing for Keeps, won the 2008 Parsec Award for Best Novel and was subsequently published by Swarm Press. It reached number one in science fiction on Amazon.com and is also available as a free podcast novel. Mer has also co-authored a book on podcasting, as well as writing role-playing games. She is currently working on the Heaven series of Podio books, as well as new projects, and has also joined NaNoWriMo this month. On top of all of this, Mer has a fantastic podcast for wannabe authors called I Should Be Writing, which I highly recommend. So welcome, Mer.
Thanks, Joanna. I'm really excited to be on here. You know, one of my favorite things to do after waking up is checking Twitter to see all of your awesome tweets on writing and all of the websites I have to look at immediately.
Thank you so much for that. Well, and it's great to be able to connect on Twitter because, you know, I wouldn't have met you otherwise. So it's a fantastic thing. So maybe you can just start by telling people a bit about your writing background and your journey because, you know, you're so busy and successful now, but has it always been like this?
Oh, no. I decided I wanted to be a writer when I was around 12. And then I wrote stories and stuff throughout high school and college. And in college, I discovered the horrible realization that there were people better than me. So instead of taking the challenge and working harder, I decided to quit and go into the corporate lifestyle. But always in the back of my mind, it was, no, I'm really a writer. You know, I do this thing, but, you know, at nighttime I fight crime and I'm really a writer, even though I was doing neither of those things. And when I finally got laid off, a friend of mine at Red Storm Entertainment, where I was working, was offered to give me a little bit of mentoring because he'd written several novels. And he also introduced me to some people at White Wolf, and his good recommendation actually got me my first job there. And then, you know, once you complete a job and it's pretty good and it's delivered on time, you know, you'll then get more work. So my role-playing work kind of snowballed from there. And that's when I kind of gave myself permission to start learning how to write fiction again. And I guess that was around 2001. And so I've been writing freelance role-playing games and fiction since then, and, you know, things are slowly moving along with actual sales, but, you know, starting to podcast my work is actually what has built me an audience and gotten me the most attention from, for example, my publisher Swarm, and then agents and stuff like that. So it's been a bit of a snowball. I don't, you know, you say I'm busy and successful. I just feel busy. I feel like I'm in a kind of holding pattern right now, but hoping cool things will begin to happen soon.
And you said a couple of things there that were really, you know, resonant with me. Resonant, I should say. You said, you know, first of all, that you thought people were better than you. And that's something that I thought, you know, when I was younger, I used to read Umberto Eco, you know, the Name of the Rose was my favorite book. And right. I thought I had to write like him in order to be a writer. But obviously, you know, he's one of those sort of great literature writers. So how did you kind of break through that, you know, mental block of, you know, should I have to be that great literature writer, or can I just write what I like?
I don't know. I hope this isn't for everybody, because I don't want to tell everybody they have to wait till their 30s. But, you know, I was wide-eyed and naive and really believing in my own awesomeness in my 20s. And I still had, like, I still questioned my own awesomeness. But at the very moment that my awesomeness was questioned by someone else, and not saying somebody else said I wasn't good, but it was somebody, you know, showing me fiction that they wrote. And I'm like, whoa, you're not Neil Gaiman. You're my peer. Why are you so much better than me? I just let that completely shut me down. And it wasn't until later when I realized that, you know, nobody's going to help me. I mean, yeah, people will help me if I ask them to, but nobody's really going to do this for me. They're not going to wake me up in the morning and tell me I have to write and make sure I get my word count done and hold my hand and all that stuff. I have to do it all myself. So if I was going to actually do this writing thing, I was going to have to do it, and no matter where I started. And then when I realized that if you keep doing something every day, you're going to get better at it. And, you know, so I began to appreciate the hard work involved and, you know, realizing that if I just kept at it, something good would happen just for sheer stubbornness.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, following on from that, you also said you were slowly moving along and you're talking about the hard work there. And I guess I feel in this sort of world of fast, fast internet, everyone expects to become a successful writer sort of overnight. Can you maybe comment on the journey, you know, of being a writer and how you see that as sort of a lifetime thing?
Oh, it's funny. I've heard at least Elizabeth Baer say this, but I've heard a lot of other people say it, is the whole, it takes 10 years to make an overnight sensation. Like suddenly when an author bursts onto the scene, everyone says, oh, where do they come from? And the author's thinking, well, I've been writing books for 10 years. Why haven't you paid attention to me? But it's a building thing. I mean, like in podcasting, people wonder how to get successful, like Scott Sigler or J.C. Hutchins, or to a lesser extent, me. I mean, I've got the audience. I don't have the book deals they do, but I've got a large audience. And, you know, Scott always says, look, we've been doing this for years. You have to build a foundation and keep going. I mean, yes, it doesn't seem like that long, but in podcasting, it's, we've been doing this a long time. And again, it's stubbornness. It's, you know, you come up with an idea and you say, hey, let's do it. And, you know, I've lost a lot of my fear of failure because I know that if something fails, then I'll just move on to the next thing. It's not such a big deal. I just keep throwing darts at the dartboard. And if one of them hits, then yay. And if one of them hits the wall, then I say, I'm sorry, and go and patch up the wall. But then, you know, keep moving. So it's just a matter of keeping going and, no matter who notices you or not, eventually, you know, stubbornness does work.
No, that's great. And it's interesting you say you lost your fear of failure, because you also do your kind of lessons learned, don't you, on your podcast, I Should Be Writing. You talk a lot about things you've learned, which I really appreciate and, you know, really recommend that podcast to people. One of the things you did recently, I think, was, you know, it's okay to suck, which I thought was brilliant. Maybe you could just talk a bit about that.
Well, I think a lot of people, it's something about writing, and I believe it's that we all use words every single day to communicate. And that makes people think that if I can tell you about the funny thing that happened to me at the grocery store today, then I can write a novel because I'm already using the words. So what's so hard about writing this novel? So everyone thinks they can write, and then they sit down to do it, and everybody has this great idea. But they sit down to write it. And if you haven't been writing your whole life or haven't been writing for the past couple of years, then the story's probably going to suck. And I say that just as complete honesty. And I try to equate it to, say, sports. I mean, if you say, you know what, I'd like to run a marathon. Are you going to step out of your door and run that marathon? No, you'll get sick. You'll hurt yourself. But, you know, that's when you start going out and running a little bit every day. And if you allow yourself to have a couple of bad days or a couple of races where you don't perform that well, you know you'll be better the next time. And so I think when you let go of this one perfect shining idea I have in my head is going to be the thing to get me famous and wonderful and money and groupies and all sorts of awesomeness, and just say, I'm going to tell a story and it may or may not be good, but when I'm done, I will have gotten a little bit better at least. And I think when people allow themselves to just write the story and not worry about what's going to happen to the story afterward, that's when they're really let themselves be writers and let themselves actually improve. It's like when they're thinking about it too much, they hold themselves back, or they put some sort of handicap on themselves. But when they just write and not worry about sucking or worrying about how good it is or where it's going to be published, then a lot better things happen.
Hmm. Now, that's fantastic advice. And, many of us are doing the NaNoWriMo at the moment, which is National Novel Writing Month, if people don't know what that is. And, I was tweeting with somebody who said she'd spent her whole time, you know, her whole day's amount of time writing about her heroine's eyelashes.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well,
better be some good eyelashes.
Yeah, that's what I said. So maybe, you know, on that topic, maybe you could give us a few tips, because many of us are trying to write a novel this month, and you've written, you know, lots. Maybe you could give us a couple of tips for writing a novel, whether it's fast or slower, obviously.
Well, there are two parts of your brain. One is, I forget like which one the right one is and which one the left one is, and emotion and logic and all that. But I like to think of them as the writing side and the editing side. And they don't work well together at all. And so you need to let the writing side write the story and do all the work. And then you let the editing side take over. And I knew a guy once who would, when I worked in the coffee shop in college, he would come in every night and he would work on his book. And I was so impressed, and I got to know him. And then after seeing him work for days and days and days, I asked him what he was working on. And he showed me the first paragraph of his novel. And it was a really good paragraph. It was really good, but he wouldn't let himself get any farther because he had to make that first paragraph so perfect, which again is, you're allowed to suck. Just write it. Another thing is, you need to give yourself permission. And this is, you know, another one of those hard lessons I had to learn, where I was writing my the short story that eventually became Playing for Keeps. And then after I wrote it, I wanted to rewrite it and realized it was going to be a novella. And then I realized I hadn't said enough. And I thought, oh my God, this could be a novel. Am I ready to write a novel? That's too scary. I wouldn't even say it. I called it the N-word. I'm like, oh, it may turn into one of those N-word things. And a friend of mine's like, it's just a novel. Just write it. And I really psyched myself out. I mean, it's just a long piece of fiction. Yes, it's got nuances and it's got structure, and there are things to fix if you break it, but just write the story. Really, that's really all it is. And let's see. I am learning right now about outlining, and I don't do a lot of detailed outlines, but I have discovered that the more I allow myself to sit down and focus, even just a rough, basic, like, 5-plot-point outline, not even getting into the nitty-gritty, but just the basic 5-act outline, I find myself writing a lot easier. It's a lot clearer. So I know a lot of people do the organic writing thing, and I do. I find out wonderful plot twists and turns to take while I'm writing. I don't think of it beforehand. I think of it as I'm putting the words on the page, but still an outline does help out a lot. So those are my three tips for the moment.
No, they're fantastic. And I guess I have one question out of that. It kind of flows out of that, because I was thinking, you know, about Playing for Keeps. At the end, you've basically left it open for a second book, and I believe you're working on the sequel. Is that right?
Yes, that's my NaNoWriMo book.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, did you, when you started writing that, did you already have in mind that it was going to be a series, or did the ideas, you know, at the end, suddenly you found yourself finished and there was another book coming? How did you know that?
Well, the short story that came, I will give away the ending, but I have three major characters, Keepsie, Peter, and Ian. And the end of Keepsie's story was the original end of the short story. So I always knew that would kind of be this has potential, but it doesn't have to, it's not really a hanging thread. Mm. But the other two characters, their futures are much more in balance right now, and much more, hint of a sequel, and those came about while I was writing it. So I didn't have a whole series mapped out when I started writing it. Mm. I guess that's a really long way to answer that question, but their dangling plot threads came up when I was writing.
Yeah. No, well, this is interesting to me right now because I'm writing my first fiction and I was very nervous before NaNoWriMo and thinking I'll never get ideas, like the ideas won't come. But what's happening is as I write something, something else will appear, you know. I just wondered if that's what happens for you as a novelist.
Oh, totally. It's totally what happens. And the beautiful thing is, and I, it's so hard for me to describe this without sounding so freaking full of myself, but it's like, I'll lay some sort of plot seed. Let's use a metaphor here. And I won't know what it will turn into, but later on while I'm writing, I'll realize that whatever I'd planted in chapter 3 will fit perfectly in this new thing I just came up with in chapter 9. And I'm so proud of myself. It's like my subconscious was working at it and I had no idea it was coming, but it just fit perfectly right in there like a little puzzle piece. And that's one reason why I know I'll never be a hardcore outliner, because of moments like that, I'll never get it until I'm deep into the writing process.
Oh, there's so many things I want to ask you. okay, well, one thing I know that people are very, you know, really feel bad about or don't really understand is how many drafts there are between the very first one and a finished book. You know, because Stephen King seems to just do his one big first draft and then a second draft and then it's done. How does your drafting work?
Oh, gosh. It's always seemed to be, like, at the beginning, it's I write it and then I revise it once and then I start, and, you know, and then I would send it out and then it would get rejected and then I would revise it again and then I would send it out. For my first novel that's being pushed by an agent, which is my Heaven series, it's the first two novellas, I've edited that together to be a novel. That has gone through, first I wrote the novellas, then I edited it together to be a book. Then I edited it again, and then my agent sent me edits again, and then she sent me line edits, which, you know, didn't take a lot of time, but still required me to go through the manuscript one more time and look at it all. And I expect if it sells, I'll be doing that process again with an editor. So how many have we gone through? I'm not sure. That we're like at 5 or so right now. And if it doesn't sell, then I'll be talking to my agent. Should I revise? Should we talk about where I should change things? So, you know, you feel great when you finish that rough draft, but yeah, I'll try to say it in an optimistic way. It's not the first time you're going to feel great about finishing that book.
Yeah. No, that's really, that's a really good tip because, well, because I've written the nonfiction books before and I was just so sick of reading it again and again.
Yes.
And that happens to you as well. You're just like, I am so over editing this now. I want to do the next thing.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I've wondered about, and obviously this hasn't come up for me yet. I've had one small press fiction book and it came out a couple of months after it sold. But, you know, I wonder what it's like, especially in the podcast world, to podcast your book and pump it up and get people talking about it and get people excited about it. And then 18 months later, you may be working on a completely different book, and that's the foremost thing in your head. But I'm wondering how your book's out, and suddenly you have to go back to that mindset you were at 18 months previously. And you're going, yay, I'm writing a book. Hey, pay attention to my book.
And, no, that's exactly right. And I think self-publishing helps with that.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, we haven't running out of time and I've got some more questions here. So I guess one thing is you obviously have done several podcast novels and you've got your, you know, brilliant I Should Be Writing podcast. So what has podcasting actually done for you as an author and as a person, I guess?
Oh, podcasting has done everything for me. It's my career has not done anything I thought it would. I mean, if I ever thought I would go from wannabe writer to a published author, you know, that was my dream, but it has not gone the way I expected it. And that's, I've lost a lot of my fear of public speaking just by podcasting. I've lost a lot of my, oh gosh, it's a tough thing to write and then podcast because you have to have a certain sense of, brass ovaries, as I like to call them, simply because you really need to really believe in your work. And it doesn't matter how shy you are, that is a sense of, hey, I'm awesome enough to spend hours and hours and hours beyond writing this to put it out there. And I think, you know, that whole fake it till you make it slogan is, you know, I pretended to be confident for quite a while. And now I think I can pull off pretending to be confident pretty well. Mm. I'm not saying I'm confident. I'm saying I can pull it off. But really what it's done is it's given me an ability to talk directly to my readers. And one thing that is amazing about podcasting is, you know, when people read you, when they read your blog, they don't hear your voice. They don't hear your tone. And when you're talking to, when you're podcasting, people think you're talking directly to them. And it creates a so much more intimate relationship with your reader or listener. And I think it builds the audience, and then, but the audience cares. Mm. You know, I don't think people who buy Stephen King, they're not thinking, man, I really hope this book is a success for him. You know, I don't think they're thinking that. And it's not only because they know it will be. I mean, they just want to buy the book and read it. But, you know, when you start to know these people and you know them and you've heard them read their book and you've heard them talk to you and say, wow, my book's coming out. I really hope it'll do well. And you become a person to them. They care a lot more about your success. And it's a beautiful feeling. And you know, having a community and having a listener base and a reader base before I even have a major publishing deal is such an amazing feeling. And I never, ever want to take my listeners for granted. And, you know, this is why I always want to be able to give away my stuff, because I don't want to give away my stuff and have people support me and then get deals and then say, sorry guys, the gravy train stopped. You know, I always want to reward people who've supported me this far.
Mm. No, that's fantastic. And you're right. It's about knowing people or feeling that you know people, you know, and everyone who listens to your podcast feels that they know you more than people who don't, I guess. And I must say, I really love your voice as well. You have such a lovely, lovely voice. And it's so funny when I listen to you and, you know, JC Hutchins and people, and I think, oh, why don't I have such a nice voice? And then I get people telling me they like my voice. So I think it just goes around, doesn't it?
The exact same thing happens to me. I don't get it. I say thank you. I smile, but I don't get it. And you do have a lovely voice.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is it. And you have these things, your blocks in your mind as to why you can't do things. One of which is, mm-hmm. I don't like my voice, or I don't like the way I look on a video. And so, you know, people find that stops them. But as you said, people are very forgiving if you put yourself out there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. They really are. And it is amazing. You know, you sound different in your own head.
Mm.
And then you think you sound some way. And then when you hear yourself recorded, you sound different, because that's not how you sound when your voice is echoing in your head. And then you think, well, that sounds weird. So that doesn't sound good. And then, you know, then you go in a little downward spiral. It's just like, that's like the first rule of podcasting, really, is get over your voice.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to, because no one else is going to care, really.
No, that's exactly right. Okay, well, a couple more questions before we finish. You recently wrote a post on Storytellers Unplugged about the changes in the publishing industry. And obviously you use podcasting, which for a lot of people is a new technology. But what do you think the next year is going to hold for writers? You know, and how do you think these changes will affect how you are going to market yourself?
Oh, gosh. I'm so bad at doing predictions of, you know, what's going to be happening next in an industry. I just think there's going to be, I think the internet's just going to grow. We're going to have more people at least blogging their work or giving away free excerpts. You know, I think that's going to be the next big thing, is to give away free chapters of your book. And I'm talking like everybody, not just podcasters, because podcasters want to give the whole thing away.
Mm.
And, I think we're going to see more authors dabbling in podcasting and seeing what works, which will get their readers involved, which will get their readers discovering people like me. This is my little dream here. But, you know, I think it's going to have I just think if you don't embrace the internet, especially if you're a new author, you're going to get left in the dust. I really do. I don't think that, you know, as you mentioned my Storytellers Unplugged thing, I don't think the publishing is going to go 100% digital. But I think if you don't embrace that digital place, then you're going to get left in the dust if you are beginning or mid-list. I mean, if you're already a star, then it doesn't matter. But for the rest of us, we got to do, you know, we got to bust our butts however we can reach people.
Mm. No, absolutely. And I think it's exciting as well. You know, if people are embracing the changes, there are a lot of exciting opportunities for people.
Yeah, yeah, there are. And, you know, one thing I talk about in that post, and actually I was thinking about this today, is, you know, people saying that they're worried so much about piracy and people downloading their books and not paying for it and lost sales. And then I thought, well, if I had my small press release, my small press release did not get in many bookstores, it was mostly available online, and if I had not given it away and I'd made sure that everybody who had a copy of that book bought it first, that's one theory. And then the other theory would be what I did, which was release it via PDF, release it via free podcast, and do the, as Cory Doctorow says, the dandelion method of just throwing it out there. And, you know, it's going to hit a lot of people who just don't care. And then some other people are going to read it and not buy it. And then other people are going to buy it. Now, if I make more sales the second way, which one is lost money? Because everybody who does the first thing says e-piracy makes them lose money. But if I make more money by giving it away for free, which one has the lost sales?
Mm.
I don't know. That's what I've been thinking about today.
Yeah. And it is difficult. And I'm always getting this question as well myself about digital piracy. And, you know, I say about the obscurity thing is far worse, basically. So, mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with that. Okay. So we're almost done. I just, before we finish, you write in a sort of humorous manner, you know, and you've got a sense of humor on your podcast and you know, in your speaking, which I really like because I'm terrible with humor. So I wondered if I can't, you know, I'm quite English about it, you know. Do you have any tips for sort of writing humor? Is it just literally don't try, just write how you speak, or, you know, do you have anything on that?
Oh gosh, it's I haven't been able to dissect it. It's, you got to write about what you find funny. And, I think in blogging and podcasting, at least, self-deprecating humor it's a fine line. I mean, there's like, you can do it too much and make people sick of you, or you can do it to where you've laughed at yourself first. And so anybody else laughing at you will laugh at your joke and not at you so much. But I think it's mainly to write about what you find funny, not what you think other people will find funny. Mm. And then take it from there. I remember there was a scene in Playing for Keeps that when I picked it up to do another rewrite, I read the scene and I surprised myself and I laughed out loud. And I was pretty proud of that because I'd forgotten I wrote the scene and it was pretty funny because it didn't register with me at all as something I had written. Also remember, a lot about humor is surprise. And I think we forget that. So it's not only funny, but it's unexpected.
Mm. No, that's brilliant. Yeah, sorry, I just threw that in there because I was thinking about that the other day when I was listening to you. Okay, well, we're out of time. So where is the best place for people to find you and your podcasts or get in touch with you if they're interested in your books?
All of my projects are at Murverse.com, MURVERSE.com. And most of my projects have another URL associated with them, but they're all linked off of Murverse.com.
Brilliant. And you're also on Twitter?
Yes, as Mighty Mur.
Fantastic. So I'll put all those links on the blog. Thank you ever so much for your time, Mur. That was brilliant.
It was a lot of fun talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.thecreativepen.com. howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.